first and foremost, bias exists. The data set, as it's collected, right, has bias in it. How can we fine-tune and to make it more neutral?
Welcome to the AI for Creative Entrepreneurs podcast, where we guide you through the weird and wonderful landscape of artificial intelligence. I'm Rob Marsh.
And I'm Kira Hugg. We are the founders of the Copywriter Club, and our goal is to help you stay ahead of the curve when it comes to AI. We'll show you how to use these new tools to maximize creativity, simplify your work and life, and reinvent your creative career so AI works for you, not against you.
So whether you're a copywriter, a marketer, or a creative professional of any kind, join us as we explore the intersection of artificial intelligence, creativity, and your career.
There are two concerns on my mind when it comes to AI. Well, okay, there are actually more than two, but we'll address these two today: data ethics and gender bias. Today's guest, Nalini Garg, can help us tackle both issues in this conversation. Nalini is not only a strategy and analytics leader at Deloitte Consulting and a data engineer, but she's also a Women in AI ambassador, a yoga instructor, and an artist. In this conversation, we'll talk about how she uses ChatGPT and Descript in creative new ways, which includes experimenting with this tool in her yoga practice, in her new course, creating video content, and to create stories that help her sell her paintings online. And like I said, we also talk about gender bias, defining what it is and how we can neutralize it with additional data sets in larger organizations. So let's jump into the episode on the AI for Creative Entrepreneurs podcast, and let's give it a listen.
But before we get to that interview, this podcast is sponsored by our AI for Creatives course/adventure. More than 200 copywriters and content writers have already taken the course to learn more about AI, specifically how to use it as a creative partner in their business. And they're telling us that it's helping. Ethan Ross gave the course 5 stars and told us this course was exactly what I needed to create extremely useful AI prompts and to feel confident that ChatGPT was giving me the good stuff instead of the cliche flavorless content that people complain about. I've already used these prompt crafting techniques and templates to help me with projects for clients. I've even used what I've learned to create an AI research demonstration for a writing class that I teach. And he goes on and on to talk about how good the course is. Here's what's included in the course. You get the 10 things you absolutely need to know before you write a prompt so that what you get isn't bad. It's actually usable copy. There's 5 lessons, modules to help you understand what generative AI is and ChatGPT in specific, including one that talks about legal and ethical risks, something that we're talking about this podcast. There's more than a dozen lessons with demonstrations of various prompts and the way that you can stack prompts to get better responses. There's a prompt book with well over 100 different prompts that you can borrow or steal or rewrite and use in your own business any way that you want. 29 different ways to use tools like ChatGPT in your writing business. And we promise that you're going to find at least one idea here that you haven't considered before, and a toolkit that includes 100 different writing AI tools. You can browse those and see which ones work for your business and which ones might fit you better. To get started with this course, go to thecopywriterclub.com/AI4C.
Okay, let's kick off our episode with Nalini.
All right, so I would love to start with how you fell into AI and what that looked like for you.
So my first interaction with AI is, I think it goes about a few years ago when I first started noticing it in the products that I use, for example, auto responses on emails or phone texts, classification between spam versus non-spam emails, things like that. And since then I started being more curious about it. And as my full-time job, being one of the strategy and analytics leader at Deloitte Consulting, I consult with a lot of clients across data. And as I start talking more about data, I started realizing how AI is shaping our future in terms of data and technology, and just got more curious and started learning and got some certifications started implementing few ideas into our clients, and now we are where we are with this.
All right, so let's talk about, just dive into data ethics, because this is something that a lot of creatives are concerned about, right? It's like, well, what happens with our data? And is this okay? How do we feel about it? So you're in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
They're just kind of where we are with data ethics today.
Yeah, very good question, Kira. So the one way I get this question from most of my customers and clients is how would the generative AI being used currently in a way where we are not exposing ourselves to a vulnerable situation. We are not exposing our data, especially my experience being on the life sciences client side, right? It's a lot of privacy data that they deal with. And the concerns are about whether and should we use the generative AI. And if we do, what are the risks that we may expose our data into it? And my answer always has been, yes, this is a really cool tool. The technology is phenomenal, but it comes with a downside as well. But as we go through, and we are all learning in this every day, like it's evolving every day. But currently, as it stands out, is there are base models. There is a base technology which is handed to us. And what we do or what we make out of it is something that we have to learn together, right? So for example, we launch a car, like let's say a company launch a car, right? That the people who are using the car are not supposed to learn about how the car mechanics work, right? They have to learn driving it and take it forward and use it for their own use. So I consider Gen AI and every tool around it and LLMs around it as like a product. And then what we do and make out of that product is something onto us. So my straight answer at this moment to my clients is yes, we should definitely explore what that product looks like without exposing our data to them. Learn how it works, learn the intricacies about it, what it can do, what it cannot do, what it should not be used for, what it should be used for. And once we get comfortable, maybe a few months down the line, maybe a few years down the line, we start using it for more fine-tuning purpose. And by that time, we will have checks and balances in place, right? By that time, we will be at a stage where we would be able to define, okay, in terms of ethical reasons, the responses that we are getting from the LLMs are good enough on a scale. We would be able to define that scale and then use those LLMs and use the generative AI content based on that criteria.
What do you feel like is good enough? You know, how do we know if we've hit that point? How do you define that?
It's a very tricky situation to honestly answer it right now. But I would say the moral grounds, right? Obviously, the responses that we are getting should not be very abusive in language, right? Should not be, and a lot of these models have hallucinations and whatnot. So should have correct responses, should not be like making things up as we are progressing. And especially when you're using it, let's say, for example, in identifying new drugs in the life sciences space, right? So it should not be generating something or generating a response that could be eventually like life-threatening or things like that, right? I heard that there are a lot of algorithms right now being created, which can tell you more about which clinicians are using to understand the clinical trial data and understand different symptoms that come out of it. So a lot of these conversation should be around understanding these data set, and these data set should not give you results like which are not very helpful.
Okay. And yeah. Where do you feel like the timing is right now? Where are we on that timeline as far as reaching good enough? Is this like a month away? I know it's not a month away, but is it 3 years, 1 year? How fast are we moving at this point?
Well, if you look at our past few months, the ChatGPT launched in about November, December timeframe, and we are in June now, right? Half the year has been passed, and there has been tremendous progress around the LLMs when it comes to like using these solutions. And we wouldn't have expected all of this in last 15 years. And AI has been around since last 15, 20 years, right? We wouldn't have expected this tremendous progress on such a large scale in short 6 to 7 months. But given that at this point of time, it's going on a very fast pace, I would suggest for companies and customers to take some time, understand how different products are coming out, and gradually take their time, maybe 5 months, 6 months down the line, doing more experiments. And once they feel comfortable, like we cannot give an answer to any customer and client, right? It depends on a use case, like what kind of use case. If the use case is around a customer is looking to generate some content to help write a book or something, then yes, they can use it because it doesn't create that much of a risk. Versus if a customer is using it to do more drug discoveries or more impactful use cases, then they should be thinking about like experimenting it more, taking it a little bit slow, and then come up with these solutions.
And that makes complete sense. If you're discovering new drugs, that's very different than me sitting down and using a tool like ChatGPT to come up with a book idea.
Exactly. So, yeah.
I wonder if you can share any recommendations kind of across the board as far as like, it's okay to use ChatGPT for these things, but maybe not quite for this. And I'm just thinking of all the fun stories that are coming out in the media about, you know, attorneys using tools in their legal arguments and then losing their jobs and their, you know,
for sure, their practice. For sure.
So it's like, it seems like it's common knowledge and common sense, but it's also not. It's so fuzzy. We don't know.
Yeah. So I am a yoga teacher and I'm also an artist. So, and a couple of ways I'm embracing these new tools and technologies coming out is one, being a yoga teacher, there's a lot of script that we write to deliver to in our classes. And it takes a lot of time to come up with the script because we want to have different scripts for different classes. We want to have different flavor in every time we get to a class so that our classes are not monotonous. And usually it used to take me like 6 to 8 hours, honestly, in a week to come up with the script for my 5 different classes.
That's a long time.
Yeah, that's a long time. Because it's a 1 hour class and there are different things that you want to start your class with and end your class with. And using these tools like ChatGPT, Bard, I just give them a prompt and then it gives me some general answers that yes, based on your intention of the class. For example, if my intention of the class is being grounded today, I can ask ChatGPT that give me some synonyms of my intention for the class is being grounded. Can you give me some synonyms or can you give me some script to talk about my downward facing dog exercise using this intention? And what it does, it actually convert my instructions of going into a downward facing dog based on the intention. And I love it.
That's amazing.
Exactly. It saves so much time. So though I'm not able to use everything that ChatGPT gives me, I pick and choose, right? It actually helps me cutting down my research time a lot. And then I pick and choose and then deliver it into my class. The second way I use these tools, being an artist, is I put my website together. And when I upload the pictures, I need description, right? And sometimes I have thoughts in my mind where I want to go, but it's not fully formulated. Based on the picture and the story. So I give some prompts to it, like, okay, hey, you know, I have this picture, I have this art, and I want to connect it to one of the stories that from my childhood where I got the inspiration from. Can you help me formulate it? And I put some prompts in there and it generates a story for me. And then I can personalize and customize that story to fit to my purpose of choosing or creating that art piece, right? So these are some of the ways that I'm using the AI tools that are coming out. I lately started experimenting with Descript. It's a podcast creation, video creation tool. Very amazing. I trained the tool with my voice, and what I'm experimenting with it, maybe eventually I may share it in the next episode and whatnot, is using that tool to automatically generate some voice content and using my voice, which I've already trained it on, and use it to create my course that I want to put together. Yeah, so some of the experiments that are out there. And now talking about the second part where I don't use it. So for sure, when I'm doing some of the work, and I was mentioning earlier, I am a strategy and analytics manager at Deloitte. There's a lot of client confidential data that we deal with. So for sure, I restrict myself from using ChatGPT and Bard on my office machine. I use it on my personal machines. And second, I do not put any work-related information into the ChatGPT and Bard yet because of the unknowns, right? We don't know how these models are using the data that we are putting on them right now. And the companies have already said that, right? It's visible that they're using the publicly available data set, as well as the user data that people are inputting. So I restrict doing all of that. What I would recommend is if anybody is trying to play with it, rather than using the UI version of it, use the API versions, which will not let the Bard GPT use your data that you're training it on or that you're using for your own code development perspective.
Okay, this is really helpful. I mean, it also makes sense. Don't use your clients' confidential information in these tools. Not a great idea, but it's not the end of the world if you create yoga scripts.
Yep.
And ChatGPT pulls in that information and kind of feeds it into the machine. That's okay. I think those are some really great examples. I'm wondering if you have any moments of surprise as you've been playing, not even just playing, but experimenting with these tools, personally, professionally, as an artist. What has surprised you the most recently?
And I think people have talked about it a little bit already, but one example I can give you is when I started using ChatGPT a few months ago, I wasn't sure about the power that the technology had. And this is one of example from my yoga classes. When towards the end of the yoga class, we actually asked students to go into Savasana, which is like a sleeping meditation, for about 5 to 7 minutes. And while they do it, I actually started using ChatGPT to generate poems for me based on the intention that I set for the class. And it would come with such precise poem, which would connect with the audience, like literally 15, 20 lines of poem. And I would deliver it. I would speak it in the moment when students are in their meditation. And I did it once or twice. And after that, and on third day, I didn't do it. So the students after my class, they came back and asked, saying that, hey, you didn't deliver the poem today. And I was so, so surprised that knowing the power of the tool, that it creates something so phenomenal in the moment and you deliver it. I didn't realize it until that student came back to me and say, like, I missed it. That it is so connecting with the audience and something, yeah, on my hand, available to me. I don't have to put in any effort. It's all this kind of power is really amazing.
Yeah, I'm wondering how you talk about it in your practices as a yoga practitioner and as an artist. If you're kind of transparent about how you use it, you know, if at the beginning of the yoga class you're like, by the way, this class is brought to you by ChatGPT, or if you give any credit on your painting website, and so how you're doing that, and then how you advise we as copywriters and creatives think about that, because oftentimes we really in that work, we do need to disclose whether or not we're using it, or many of us should do that.
Very good question. So the way I handle it today is towards the end of it, when my class closes and when we are doing the presentries and we close the class during our final, after the Savasana, during our final words, I always say like, hey, this is me, Nalini. Thank you so much for coming in. And by the way, the poem that I just recited, I created it using an AI tool. So if you like the poem, the credit goes to the tool, but the credit of delivering it goes to me, right? So generating the content is one thing, but then delivering the content is also another thing. People can write the poem, but then sometimes people who write stuff cannot deliver the stuff impactfully, right? So the way I would say is at least it's a 50-50% credit in my head at this point of time. Yes, I use the content which is out there. I might have also used the poem from somebody else rather than ChatGPT, but then speak about it and delivered it in a way which connected to my audience, which connected to my students, and they liked it the way I delivered it. Right. Yeah. So there are two aspects to it.
And you probably blew their minds when they heard that it's an AI tool. They're like, what? That is so fun. I can't wait to go to a yoga class. I don't think my yoga teacher, she's wonderful. I don't think she's playing around with AI tools. I would be surprised.
I know. I did teach a few of them how I do it so that they can use it in their real life too. And some of them were like really mind blown.
So I'd love to dive into the second example you shared about your artist's website and pulling together those stories. Can you just share maybe a little bit more about the prompts you use, if you remember, some of those prompts and how you make those work? Because I think that could work for many of us who are trying to showcase products or services and we want to connect them to a story.
Yeah. So I can talk about one of my paintings, which is actually the cover of my website at this point. It's called Rang Mahal. And why I call it Rang Mahal is I have a very distant memory from my childhood. I come from India, and specifically the state is Rajasthan, which is a state of palaces. If you've heard about the kings and queens, that's my land. And I grew up going to these palaces, like huge mansions and palaces where king and queens used to live. Massive bedrooms, massive gardens, massive rose gardens. And the idea that was inspired to create this painting was actually recreate the memories of one of the rose gardens that I've been to. And I tried to mimic it into that art. So I wanted to put it together in the description. So I gave the prompts like, first of all, size. Some of the prompts were like, defining the size of the painting. So there's a specific description that goes on the website. You need to define the size. You need to define the colors. And you need to define the texture of the art and what style. So the prompts could be contemporary style painting dedicated to state of India, Rajasthan, based on king and queen's palace, something like that. And it will come up with a story. If you like the story, good. If you don't like the story, adjust your prompt accordingly so that it, whatever it generates towards the end, fits what you had in your mind.
Is it helping you? Is it helping you sell the paintings? You feel like it's making a difference?
It actually helps me at least reduce the time in putting the website together and content together. I'm also exploring other AI tools which can automatically just read my painting and then come up with the description of colors into it or different textures into it. I'm yet to see an AI tool who can actually just take the picture and come up with a story by itself. Like this is what I see in the painting, like people do, right? When I go to the art galleries and museum, you stand in front of an art and try to understand what thought process the artist might have been when they created that piece. So I'm looking for the tool or artificial intelligence, something to figure out and tell me, give their perspective. What do you see when I give you this? I'm yet to see that. So it'll be something fascinating.
Coming soon.
Yeah.
And let's dive into your third example, using Descript to create your voice and then potentially a course. Can you talk more about how that breaks down and what that looks like?
Yeah. So right now I'm experimenting with generating small videos and record of my voice, feeding it into the tool. The way it learns is it basically break down my voice word by word and learns how I speak a particular word. It might be different because, you know, I have a little bit of accent, which is fine, but it has to, for the tool to speak in my accent, they have to at least have like, you know, one or twice occurrence of a word so that they can speak it properly. So right now, and it happens sometimes that it doesn't know how I, when I put in a script and ask it to read it in my voice, it doesn't understand a word and then just say gibberish, something like that. So what happens is the more you feed the tool, the more it gets customized to your language and the way you speak, your pronunciation. And once the model is trained on your voice, you feed in the script whatever you want, like maybe a white page, maybe just upload a white paper, maybe just upload a book, maybe just upload something, or whatever you had in your mind which you want to create audio for. You can just put that script in, type that script in, and let your voice just speak it out for you. So you don't have to actually sit down in front of a Zoom meeting, 30 minutes, 1 hour, and speak about it. You can just type in the script and let the voice do the thing, and the recording will be generated for you.
And where do you see tools like that going? Because I think that's really powerful, but part of me, you know, is like, well, I could just read the script in my own voice rather than needing to upload it into the tool and then create all these scripts, but you can scale that in such a powerful way. So where do you see that opportunity in the near future?
So for sure, you brought up a good point. The way I'm planning to use it, where I could save a lot of time, because like I mentioned, I am embracing these tools to cut down my time, which on the tasks that are very monotonous and time consuming. That has always been my effort. And with this, where I'm going with it is in a few months, I'm planning to launch a course around LLMs, as well as cloud hyperscalers, how different hyperscalers work based on my understanding and learning. And the course is more than 15, 20 hours worth of, you know, video content. So when I'm finding time, I have time to write it down, but I don't have time to put it together into a video yet, right? So what I can do is, if I have a trained model of my voice, and as in when I'm finding time to write it into a paper, I can just feed the script into the model and create my voice. If I do not have to be on video, and it doesn't have to be a video, right? The courses could be just audio courses. With just some videos here and there, which can be recorded later on and then embedded into it. But most of the courses are just audio with some slides coming out from it, right? So once you have the audio, you can superimpose the audio onto the slides, and there you go, you have the content. So that's my plan. Let's see if it works the way I'm expecting it to. The first one might be difficult, but once I get through the exercise and hoops of it, I'm sure the second and the third will be easier.
Yeah. And I mean, especially you could scale it with a team, right? If you start to have your team, I mean, your team members creating scripts for you, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're using AI tools to create more scripts.
Yeah, for sure.
And you could put your voice over all of that. That could become really powerful. It's also a little scary because then it comes into like, well, you know, who can take your voice and put it on? So it's something that
I was about to think that. Yeah. So at this point, like it is in this moment right now, I consented to have my voice recorded. Because of experimental purposes.
Through the tool you consented.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. But for sure, if people have restrictions and resistance around it, For sure, we have to look into it, right? And the companies have to honor it. That's something that we all have to go through. I am more of a open person to explore and embrace all the new technology coming in. So I'm experimenting with all of this and see how far we can go with that.
So maybe I could access your voice.
For sure.
Great. Okay. I do want to shift and talk about gender bias and just to define, like, what does that mean when we talk about that? And then an update on kind of where that is currently with these AI tools.
Yeah, so I have read a lot of papers, and part of my, I think I probably have talked about a lot of my side jobs already. So let's do one more. I am a Women in AI leader for Women in AI profit, nonprofit for USA. And part of that role comes with the opportunities to actually do events every month and invite our women leaders and talk about all of this new upcoming technologies, generative AI, biases and whatnot. And I get to hear their perspective as well, right? So in some of the conversation, and we have one YouTube video that we launched a few months ago on that. And some of these perspectives are really good. I remember talking to a few leaders into that event. One of them is actually explicitly working in that area. First and foremost, bias exists. There's a lot of data set that these models have been trained on. And the data set is, as it's collected, right, has bias in it. For example, live data set has come from different countries. And we don't know, like, what kind of situations those data sets has been collected, what environmental factors have associated, what type of age gaps, what type of genders have all of these associated with. And if these models are trained on all of this data set without considering bias, without considering or having, without fine tuning it, the results that are coming out could be very biased, right? Think about human minds also. We don't know everything. We only know what circumstances have shaped us into, our experiments, our learnings from of the world, our learnings from the internet, our learnings from our parents, our learnings from our friends and family, right? But we don't know everything. So maybe our perspective to a particular situation could be different from a person who has been into that situation and have seen the other side of the road. There is a very nice video on YouTube that I have watched. And when it comes to gender bias, first and foremost, what we have to look into is what kind of data set the product has been trained on. Once we understand, yes, there is a bias, how can we fine tune and give more data set into the product to make it more neutral towards those biases and create some ethical grounds. And I'm proposing it in all of my data projects that I'm going to. Creating an AI governance council is very important. And the purpose of that AI governance council is to understand what kind of data set do we want to expose to these products. If we expose the data set to these products, what kind of risk are we running into? And whether the results that are coming out are biased, non-biased, are abusive, are sexually offensive, things like that, right? So creating those principles are very important, and that's the task of the AI council. Once we set up that AI council, we also have to give them the responsibility to govern it. Like, creating a council is good. Like, one company can say, we have a council, right? But until the council owns the data and understands and apply the principles, rules and regulations, it will not happen. So understanding and operationalizing it is also very important into this.
And who ideally would be on that council? Is it, you know, a couple of people? Is this a large council?
So it depends based on how big of a company customer we're talking about. If it's a multinational company, obviously having different counts, having a council with a different perspective from different markets, regions and business areas will help more, will make more sense versus if it's a small company within, let's say, United States or something, then maybe just 4 or 5 team member under different units would be able to help in that.
Got it. So you're recommending this to some of your clients so that they can govern their own data and make sure they can decrease the bias as much as possible. Yes. Okay. And what would you recommend to kind of regular people, like, you know, the copywriters, the small business owners, freelancers who are using these tools will continue, you know, will increase their usage of these tools, are concerned about the gender bias, don't want to necessarily pull that into their work that they're delivering for other clients. What should they do to just be careful and, you know, check everything? What is their responsibility? And is there like a checklist of what we should be doing every time we have an output to run through?
Yeah, I would suggest first and foremost, the tools are there, but they're not everything. Not everything is bulletproof in that, right? So first and foremost, do your due diligence. Whenever you are using an AI tool, whenever any content is created, do a fact check. Make sure it's not something the algorithm just hallucinated about, right? Do your fact check. Once you do that, second is, I would always encourage us, and I do it myself too, and I have seen it live, that when you're asking AI tool to generate something, it will generate some story or whatever you're trying to generate or poem. But having that human factor and having your, how should I say this? Like having your authentic self into that content is very important. There is one way a tool can generate the response versus there's another way how me as person, Nalini, will speak about it, right? So even though the content might have been created by AI tool, bringing in your lens, the way you would like to deliver it, maybe adding some slangs, maybe adding some jokes into it that you would bring in would actually differentiate you from just somebody who is using AI tool to generate the content. And third and foremost is the delivery. AI tool can create the content for you. Like I was going back on my poem example, delivering is you, is all you, right? So how would you put your energy in putting yourself out there, putting your authentic self out there and making it more flashy, catchy to people, connecting with the audience if something is onto you. Yeah,
those are great tips. So as we wrap up, I want to know just kind of real quick what you're most excited about in the AI space and what you're concerned about. We'll go both ways, positive, negative.
For sure. Something I already shared about the Descript. I'm very excited to see how I can take it further and launch my course. All the best to me. It may take a few months, but let's see. And something I am really concerned about is once I use these tools, whether the content that I am creating using these tools would become like publicly available information, and I may not get paid enough on my courses because now it's a publicly available information.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So something we should be thinking about as we use these tools.
Yeah, great points. So for anyone listening who wants to maybe get updates about that course or just connect with you and ask questions, become buddies, where should they go?
I have a couple of forums. I am on LinkedIn. You can find me on LinkedIn with my name, Nalini Garg. I'm a manager in strategy and data analytics practice. So you can find me using Deloitte. I am on Instagram with my website as well. You can find me with artbynalini.com and same name for Instagram too.
All right. I'm excited to check out your art. And I look forward to more yoga practitioners using ChatGPT in their scripts. I can't wait.
All right. We want to thank Nalini Garg for joining us on the podcast to talk about gender bias, data ethics, and how we can use AI tools to create course content, stories that sell our art, and even yoga scripts and other things that can just save us hours and hours of our time. And once again, if you want to jump into that AI for Copywriters course, go to thecopywriterclub.com/AI4C. That's the number four, AI number four C.
And that's the end of this episode of AI for Creative Entrepreneurs, a Copywriter Club podcast produced by Brandon Burton. If you've enjoyed this episode, please leave a review of the show on your podcast app, or if you're catching this on YouTube, you could like this video, subscribe to the channel, and you could even leave a comment below to let us know your favorite takeaway from the show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.